Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very senior human resources leader from the social sector from India, Seema Sali. Seema, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Seema is the Chief People and Process Officer of the Jagriti Seva Sansthan. Seema, let's start by asking you a little bit about the Jagriti Enterprise Center in Purvanchal. What do you do here and what are some of the activities?
Right. So, like you mentioned, I head the people and processes for Jagriti Seva Sansthan. Mm-hmm. Jagriti Enterprise Center is one of Jagriti Seva Sansthan's initiative.
Right.
Jagriti has two major initiatives. Mm. One is the Jagriti Yatra, which is 14 years old. And what they do in the Yatra is we take around 500 youth between the age of 18 to 27, along with 200 little experienced people as facilitators. Mm. And the 500 youth are, we call them Yatris, on a chartered train across the country. Okay. They start from Mumbai, go all the way to Kanyakumari and in Orissa to Ganjam and via Nalanda and Devriya to Delhi and then to Rajasthan. Mm. And touching Ahmedabad, they come back to Mumbai. Mm. And what do they do in these 15 days? Mm. In these 15 days, they meet a whole lot of role models who have been into social impact organizations. Mm. Some of them are like, we have Harish Handa from Selco in Bangalore, then we have Arvind Eye Care, then we have Ram Vikas, then we have Poonj in Delhi. So we meet all of them and understand what it takes to start or have a social enterprise in tier two cities, in tier two India. Mm. And also during the journey, these youngsters develop a business plan. Mm-hmm. And when we are in Devriya, where the train stops for a day and people don't sleep on the train, they sleep in the houses or buildings, they do the they pitch their business plans. And the best business plans are chosen and they are mentored. And this is like, in short, they are doing their entire MBA in 2 days, in 2 weeks. Mm. And moreover, they are doing it for the Middle India. Mm. And our focus is to build Middle India through enterprise. Mm. And it is very interesting to know that in the last 14 years, we have had 14 journeys now. Two of them were digital in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. We have had almost 7,000 people who have been on this train, physical or digital. Mm. And out of which 28% have become entrepreneurs.
Amazing.
And they are giving work to people in the Middle India, in the tier two India. Mm. So this is one initiative. The second initiative is a slight extension of that in the sense that now we have a physical incubation center that is starting in Devriya. Mm-hmm. We have a plan of doing it in 4 centers across the country. Mm. Devriya being the first one, we want to do one in Kanyakumari, one in Ganjam in Orissa, and one in western side in Vidarbha, most likely in Nagpur. And these centers are going to be catering to a district about 100 kilometers surrounding to the center, where we encourage the small and mid-level organization, and we incubate them and we help them get more, generate more livelihoods or jobs as they do. So this is what Jagriti is doing, and the Jagriti Enterprise Center Purvanchal, as we call it as JECP, is the first one which is coming up.
Amazing, amazing. The train rides seem very, very exciting. I mean, you know, touching so many amazing places. But, you know, you also spoke about your mission of creative enterprise in Middle India and your three pillars of incubation, innovation, and inspiration.
Right.
First, tell me, how do you define Middle India? And then talk to me about your three pillars.
Yes. See, Middle India, we... all right, let me put it like this. If we talk about C.K. Prahlad's bottom-up pyramid, we envision India as a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
But what we envision India as a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
We have the, on top we have the, let's say, the privileged class, and mm-hmm. at the bottom we have the underprivileged class, and the mm-hmm. middle is what is very, very important.
Understand.
Because okay. there is a lot of people there, and this middle India resides not only in metros, but in the tier 2 and tier 3 cities. There are multiple districts in which it resides.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the citizens in this place, not as voter and consumer, but as builders and creators.
Mm-hmm.
So that for us defines the middle India.
Okay.
The tier two cities or towns in the country, tier 2, tier 3,
mm-hmm.
and the people in them who are more of builders and creators,
mm-hmm.
rather than typically when we look at them as voters and consumers.
Understand.
And we take the inspiration, entrepreneurial mindset of these people as an inspiration for us.
Mm-hmm.
which we would like to integrate into the local culture as an enabler.
Hmm.
And that for us is very inspiring story.
I agree. And how do you determine who to select as a part of your train journey and to support and incubate as a part of Middle India?
The train journey, how we select, very interesting question.
Hmm.
Like I mentioned, we take only about 700 people onto this train.
Correct.
And every year, the application process for a journey which starts on 25th of December every year,
mm-hmm.
the application process starts right from January.
Wow.
So we almost have around 10-11 months window where the application process, selection, and interviewing, all that happens.
Mm.
So for 7,000 a seat availability, we get applications which are over 25,000, 30,000.
Wow.
And these applications come from across the country, from the metros, from the tier 2 cities, from the villages, from the remotest places of the country,
mm-hmm.
from everywhere we get applications. So what is the criteria we decide on or think of when we're selecting these people?
Mm-hmm.
We look at, are they committed to nation building?
Mm-hmm.
What is their alignment?
Mm-hmm.
We also want to bring in as much of diversity as possible. So if you look at regions, we take them from all the regions, north, south, east, and west.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is a gender diversity. We make sure that at least above 48% are women.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also look at the urban-rural mix. There has to be a good mix of urban and rural.
Mm-hmm.
And we also look at people who want to do something, may or may not even be educated.
Mm.
Like in the digital yatra of 2020, we had a lady from Maharashtra who was a farmer, but she was so enthusiastic. She learned how to operate a mobile because it was a digital yatra.
Yeah.
And she downloaded the apps. She was most, I would say, willing participant in all the discussions and everything.
Mm.
If at all there was something she didn't understand, she would stop and ask us.
Mm.
And looking at her enthusiasm and the way she was conducting herself, the rest of the entire crowd started translating the English discussion online immediately for her into Hindi so that she could understand and she could respond and she could participate.
Wow.
So that is the kind of crowd we get. And they are actually driven by the vision of the yatra and what the yatra wants to achieve.
Hmm. And of course, each train must be creating 700 people into one fantastic network.
Yes.
Which will stay with them throughout their life, probably.
Yes, that is it. And some of them then go on to become JADE, what we call as Jagrati Ambassador for District Enterprises.
Hmm.
And they themselves create a small ecosystem in their districts or in their places where they start encouraging the entrepreneurs, or like we call them Udyamis, into starting their own Udyam.
Amazing. And Seemat, I'm so fascinated with this train journey. Tell me a little bit more. When was it started? Whose idea was it? What was the thought behind it?
Yes. This was started by Shashank Mani Tripathi, who is the founder of Jagrati.
Mm.
As a commemoration for the 50th independence year, he first undertook the journey in 1997. So that was the first journey. That time Shashank was actually in London, but from London he coordinated everything and he envisioned this yatra and put in a lot of effort. And that first journey was done in 1997, and if I remember it correctly, it was a 21-day yatra and not a 15-day yatra. And after the journey, he actually published a book book called I'll have to check the name.
No worries.
Published a book which spoke about his experience of the yatra. And once that book was published, there was a lot of people who wanted to experience this yatra. And there was quite a bit of demand for repeating the yatra. So in the year 2008 when he decided to make it as an annual event. And from 2008 onwards, continuously it is going on without a break. There have been a little modifications in the duration and the way the yatra happens. The first yatra, I think, had only about 300 participants, whereas the current yatra has 700 participants.
And so you charter a full plane, a train?
Yes, we charter a full train.
Wow.
And of course, there are modifications because we have to fit in so many bathrooms for so many people. And this is going to be a very cold season. So we might have to make arrangements for a little warm water availability. So there's a lot of preparation that goes on.
And then you'd say that they're the three pillars of incubation, innovation, and inspiration.
Yeah.
How are these three values, if I can use that term, imbibed by all the participants?
Let me start with inspiration. The whole idea of the journey itself is very inspiring. Okay. And then we have all these role models who come and talk to us during the journey about their experience, how they have built up, what they are doing. And there are various people who whose journey itself is so inspiring that most of the yatris or most of the people who are on the train get inspired to contribute a lot to the country. So that apart from that, the journey, when I told you, the journey stops at Devariya. And in Devariya, there is this Shashank's ancestral village called Barpar. Now, this Barpar has a big banyan tree, which is almost 300-year-old. And that banyan is also so inspiring. And most of the business pitches get done under the banyan tree.
Okay.
So a lot of us draw inspiration from the banyan tree, from the whole lot of people who associate with us during the journey. And also not to forget that Purvachal was the region of the first, let's say, War of Independence, 1857.
Yeah.
Lakshmibai and Mangal Pandey are from this region. So we take inspiration from them too.
Amazing. Amazing. Siva, now let me move to talking to you about your specialization, which is human resources.
Right.
Let me first ask you, what are the kind of challenges you face as the chief people and process officer at the Jagriti Seva Sansthan?
Yeah. First, we are a not-for-profit organization. So we don't have a revenue. We have to depend on donations.
Correct.
Having said that, finding the right kind of people is always going to be a challenge. Because A, we need people who are passionate about building nation. Who are willing to adjust with a lot of not so luxurious or fancy environments that they get to work in the corporate offices.
Right.
And who are willing to walk that extra mile to, you know, not be the king or a queen, but be a kingmaker. Like our founder Shashankji says, I'm not interested in Hanuman. I'm interested in Jampant.
Correct.
Those people who can groom or mentor a Hanuman, those people who can groom or mentor leaders. So we finding those kind of people becomes a challenge. Yes, we take a lot of trouble to source those kind of people and bring them on board. And so far, touch wood, we have been quite successful.
Fascinating. When you talk about some of the changes in human resources and You're obviously a very experienced HR leader. What are some of the changes you have seen in the human resources function over the years?
Right. I remember when we started off, I started my journey as an entrepreneur. And when I was looking at HR function, it would be generally to hire, make the salaries, mark the attendance, and that's it. Correct. We don't need HR for anything else.
Correct.
And slowly it started evolving. Then we had another function called learning and development or training. It was mainly called training in earlier days, which got included in HR function. And from there, in the last, I think, 5-6 years, the changes have been quite drastic. We talk a lot about employee engagement. We talk a lot about learning and development and organization development. We are more focused on the development of people because that is not separate from the development of an organization. So if I can develop my people, then it indirectly helps grow my organization and see the kind of success that we want to see in the organization.
Correct.
So that is being changed. So if I were to put it in a nutshell, the HR function today is more of a partner to the business function and helps the business function build the business much better than it was earlier.
Very well said. And, you know, I was just thinking as you were speaking that when I started my life with ITC after my MBA, there used to be the personnel manager and an industrial relations manager.
Yes.
And that has now evolved into a CHRO role.
Yeah, right.
But coming back to you, I'd love to get your perspective. The whole world is talking about the great resignation. And I'm told that this had an impact in India as well.
Right.
What are your thoughts? And have you been faced with challenges of the great resignation in the social sector?
Not so much in social sector. There has not been a great resignation as, or even you call it quite quitting or whatever. We haven't faced that so much. But what I have seen is I have seen it in other industries. Being in HR, you always talk to your peers and your other industry colleagues as to what is happening and all that. I think one of the major reasons was also that there were a lot of pressures. Because you're working from home and there was no line between work-life balance and the salaries were stagnant, but the cost of living was not stagnant because you had to pay that a little bit premium to get what you wanted. And you had to fend for yourself, do it housework or work, everything. And I would say a lot to blame on the managers also, because if the work had to be gotten done, they didn't respect the time boundaries. I could get a call from somebody much after working hours. And when the people had to make sure that their housework was done and office work was done, they needed that space or they needed that work-life balance much more during the pandemic than before or after.
Right. Well said. Well said. The other thing that I've been noticing, and I've been speaking to many, many people on, you know, the young individuals who are now coming, who have come into the workforce, post the pandemic, people have got used to work from home.
Right.
People have also got used to multiple income streams. So you've had instances from the technology sector where people have been asked to go because they've been moonlighting.
Yeah.
What are your perspectives on this?
See, work from home is here to stay whether we like it or not.
Correct.
Especially when it comes to the metros, people don't like spending that time in the commute, which can be used for better things.
Correct.
Now, my view on moonlighting is slightly different from the popular view. I have no issues with moonlighting. I would rather go more than the time you spend in the office, what are you spending the time doing? As long as you're giving my results, what you do with your time, I am not going to be concerned.
Okay.
A lot of people may not have the same opinion, but I beg to differ because youngsters, they have aspirations. They want to do a lot of things. And like, for example, if you take take an example of a fresh engineer,
mm-hmm.
you get into an IT industry, your starting salaries are maybe 3 lakhs per annum. And with 25,000 rupees a month living in a metro, because these jobs are mostly available only in the metros, tier two cities may not have too much of a technology jobs. You just cannot survive with 25 rupees a month in a metro. So if they're taking a gig and doing something extra and doing something, I shouldn't have problem as long as they are delivering what they're expected to deliver.
Okay, that's a fantastic perspective. I have time for two or three more questions. I wanted to also ask you, how is technology changing the entire human resources function in organizations?
Yeah. Technology is good when you're doing mass hiring. It's good when you have to hire at an entry level. But when you go slightly above or even at leadership level, more than your experience or IQ, the EQ matters.
Correct.
And that may not be possible through to assess through technology. And a lot of times what happens is if we are using technology for screening, they might lose out on people who are really, really good because maybe the keywords are not available in the biodata or the CV or whole lot of other things, or the right experience is not there. But these people could be bringing much more than what the job requires, and we are missing out on those. So I'm okay with technology for hiring in the entry level. But as you go higher, I think we should move away from technology. Technology can be used for your other HR functions, like you use for HRMS, your payroll, or your what you call your candidate management and other things. That is fine. But to choose your people, it needs to be going beyond the AI for matching their profiles.
Very interesting. So one more question, or maybe two more. There is a big discussion going on all over the world and in India about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Do you see this challenge in the social sector and in the areas that you are working in, especially in the tier two cities?
Yeah, there is, but not so much now, because I also earlier worked with an organization called Rural Shores. Now, Rural Shores has a lot of delivery centers or process centers across the country in a very, very small towns. And it was interesting to know that the major workforce in those centers were women. Women who would have never touched computer or seen a computer in their life were willing to get trained, come to the center and work there. And we should not also forget that 50% of our workforce is women.
Correct.
And hence the diversity and inclusion becomes very, very important. I'm not only talking about the gender diversity. I'm also talking about the race, ethnicity and other things. But there's one more very, very important part of diversity, which we never consider, or so far I have not seen anybody considering. What are we doing for the people who are neurodivergent? None of our assessment processes or nothing is in place to measure these the competencies or the assess the people who are neurodivergent.
Correct.
Because they need a different kind of assessment. They could be excellent in their work, but they may not be able to answer your typical interview questions. So what are you going to do about that? So this is one thing that I would urge most of our HR leaders or even business leaders to think that, are you going to be eliminating 5%? I'm told that 5% of the people in the world are neurodivergent. Eliminate that 5% of very brilliant workforce. And when I say brilliant, I'm talking about the caliber of people like Einstein, because he was neurodivergent.
Correct.
Just because we don't know how to assess them.
Correct. Fantastic. And on that note, Seema, thank you very much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about the incredible train journey of Jagri and Jagriti Enterprise in Purvanchal, Jagriti Enterprise Center Purvanchal. I have never heard of this, and today you've really opened my eyes on how you can actually be giving back so much, almost like an MBA in 15 days, as you said, yeah, and ending it under a banyan tree. Right. You know, this is just so fascinating, and I sincerely hope this one initiative of yours is not only helping so many people, so many potential entrepreneurs, but maybe an idea for many, many similar journeys on many, many other topics, because you've got a captive classroom of so many people.
Yes.
Thank you for talking to me about human resources and how some of the changes are beginning to happen. You know, you're obviously a very, very experienced leader. Thank you also for pointing out this amazing thought of how to include people who are neurodivergent. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.